I was happy with the community of Black and Latino students I'd found through the TWC, content to remain at the margins of Princeton's larger social scene. Our group was small but tight. We threw parties and danced half the night. At meals, we often packed 10 or more around a table, laid back and laughing. Our dinners could stretch into hours, not unlike the long communal meals my family used to have around the table at Southside's house. I imagine that the administrators at Princeton didn't love the fact that students of color largely stuck together. The hope was that all of us would mingle in heterogeneous harmony, deepening the quality of student life across the board. It's a worthy goal. I understand that when it comes to campus diversity, the ideal would be to achieve something resembling what's often shown on college brochures: smiling students working and socializing in neat, ethnically blended groups. But even today, with white students continuing to outnumber students of color on college campuses, the burden of assimilation is put largely on the shoulders of minority students. In my experience, it's a lot to ask. At Princeton, I needed my Black friends. We provided one another relief and support. So many of us arrived at college not even aware of what our disadvantages were. You learn only slowly that your new peers had been given SAT tutoring or college-caliber teaching in high school, or had gone to boarding school and thus weren't grappling with the difficulties of being away from home for the first time. It was like stepping on stage at your first piano recital and realizing that you'd never played anything but an instrument with broken keys. Your world shifts, but you're asked to adjust and overcome, to play your music the same as everyone else. This is doable, of course. Minority and underprivileged students rise to the challenge all the time, but it takes energy. It takes energy to be the only Black person in a lecture hall, or one of a few non-white people trying out for a play or joining an intramural team. It requires effort, an extra level of confidence to speak in those settings and own your presence in the room. Which is why, when my friends and I found one another at dinner each night, it was with some degree of relief. It's why we stayed a long time and laughed as much as we could. My two white roommates in Pine Hall were both perfectly nice, but I wasn't around the dorm enough to strike up any sort of deep friendship. I didn't, in fact, have many white friends at all. In retrospect, I realize it was my fault as much as anyone's. I was cautious. I stuck to what I knew. It's hard to put into words what sometimes you pick up in the ether: the quiet, cruel nuances of not belonging. The subtle cues that tell you to not risk anything, to find your people and just stay put. Kathy, one of my roommates, would surface in the news many years later, describing with embarrassment something I hadn't known when we lived together. Her mother, a school teacher from New Orleans, had been so appalled that her daughter had been assigned a Black roommate that she'd badgered the university to separate us. Her mother also gave an interview confirming the story and providing more context. Having been raised in a home where the N-word was a part of the family lexicon, having had a grandfather who'd been a sheriff and used to brag about chasing Black people out of his town, she'd been horrified, as she put it, by my proximity to her daughter. All I knew at the time is that midway through our freshman year, Kathy moved out of our triple and into a single room. I'm happy to say that I had no idea why.